Happy Sunday, everyone. This Christ the King Sunday is always a little bit of a weird feeling for me, and I feel like for us as Americans, right? Our very identity is that we rejected the King of England. Like, we don't like kings. So it seems odd that we would call Christ the King of everything, the King of the universe. And I think it's actually a very specific reason that the church insists that we call him a king. That he's not a president, he's not a prime minister that we elect that is equal to us. But a king is somebody that's always over and above. He's sovereign. He is above those that he serves. And in a way, Christ is the king. He is different than us. He does reign over the entire universe, including our lives. But I don't want to preach today so much about Christ being king, but about what kind of a king he is. Because he's not a king like any earthly king. He's not one that lords it over them, and he's not even one that appears as much of a king. He doesn't appear as being very powerful and authoritative. And yet we say that is who he is. So what kind of a king is Jesus? First of all, he's a very mysterious king. That he is really okay with the mystery being left there, with not answering all the questions, with not coming definitively to show us who he is. Right? That's very much what happens in today's gospel. There's this encounter with Pilate before Pilate is ultimately going to put him to death at the request of the crowd. And he asks Jesus very directly, "Are you the king of the Jews? Are you a king?" Jesus could have easily answered that question. But he seems to insist on being very vague, on staying in the mysteriousness of this question. Right? That he kind of says, "Well, have others told you that maybe I'm a king? Or if I was a king, you know, of this world, then there'd be people standing up for me and that they wouldn't let me be put to death. But instead, I've simply come to testify to the truth." So why in this interaction with Pilate does he remain mysterious? I think it's because he wants to invite Pilate to encounter the person Jesus for himself. That he doesn't want this encounter with Pilate just to be about, are you going to put me to death or not? Right? Jesus knows ultimately he is going to die the brutal death of crucifixion. So it's not just about what the end result's going to be. But he wants this mystery to kind of percolate within Pontius Pilate. He wants this conversation to be something that Pilate thinks about for the days and weeks to come. That when he hears these stories of this Jesus who was put to death being resurrected, not being in the tomb anymore. When he hears about the apostles that were scared to do anything, scared to be present at his crucifixion. When he hears about them months later going to all parts of the world to talk about this risen Jesus. That mystery kind of comes back into Pilate's mind. To think, was he really a king? Was he really who he said he was? Yes, a prophet sent to teach us the good news of God, to teach us how to live. But was he even more than that? Was he actually God made flesh? And the reason God remains mysterious and sometimes vague in our lives isn't to frustrate us or to make us question if he's really there, but it's to do a similar thing that he's doing with Pontius Pilate, to make it percolate in our lives to see if we can actually find the golden thread that St. Ignatius of Loyola talks about, that golden thread of God's providence and the light of Christ in our life, that we can actually look more intently for that rather than just wanting the outcome that we desire. That he loves staying in that mystery to invite us more deeply into it. In some ways, that's what our first reading from the prophet Daniel is about. It talks about this Son of Man coming on the clouds and being presented to the Ancient One. Those terms aren't ones that we use very regularly, and we always probably just assume the Son of Man just means Jesus. But I think in this case, he's referring specifically to the Messiah in human form. That there will be a human that's presented to God Almighty, the creator of the universe that's greater than all things. And this Son of Man, the one that is like us, will be the one that restores us to relationship with God. The reason I bring that up is because some theologians believe that the reason Satan and the demons, the fallen angels, the reason that they turned away from God was actually they rejected the idea of the incarnation. They rejected the idea that God could mysteriously become man out of love for us, that he would actually take on flesh, that he wouldn't just remain an authoritative, powerful God. He would actually limit his power, limit himself to being in a body, right, in one place at one time. Jesus, when he is united to God the Father as God himself, he can be at all places at all times. Right, by becoming man, he's limiting his own power. So some say that this was so mysterious, so unfathomable to some of these fallen angels that they said, we can't serve this God that will do that. We can't in our pride believe that he would actually humble himself in that way. That he would divest himself of power rather than using it to make things right, to make things as he desired. So even to the angels and ultimately the demons who rejected him, God was okay being mysterious, being maybe even misunderstood. He didn't want them to fall, but it was so that they could understand him better. That those angels that did follow him and submit to that idea of his humble incarnation, they could see what kind of a God he was. They could trust him even more rather than seeking to do things themselves. So I think we have to acknowledge that Jesus is a mysterious king. He is okay living when questions aren't answered, when living in the mystery, so that he can invite us into a deeper relationship and knowledge of him. But he is also a very sacrificial king. He's the king that seeks to offer sacrifice for himself and for others. That in a way, there's no length, there's no thing that would be too far for God to go out of love for us. It's kind of like that old Meatloaf song, right? That's what you guys are probably thinking of this morning. That's what I thought of, right? Where he sings, I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. Right? That for most of us, there's some sort of condition on our love for others. Right? I'll love you to this end, but if it goes too far, that's where it stops. Right? I'll love you if this happens, but if it doesn't, well, then I'm probably out. Right? I'll love you unless it costs me this, because that's more important. Right? Usually there's some sort of condition on our love and sacrifice. But for Jesus, as King of the universe, there is no condition on his love for us. There's no condition on how much he would sacrifice for us. That he's willing to go into every part of our lives, into every part of humanity, in order to bring the light of his love. And we can see that just in the way that Jesus lived his life. He comes mysteriously in the little town of Bethlehem. In a way that was shocking even to the magi who come and bring their great gifts for this great king. They're shocked that he would go to the length of being born in a stable. This isn't how a king's supposed to be born. But he's doing that so that he can unite himself to the poor, to those that feel outcast and persecuted. That even during his ministry, he's never afraid to go and be with sinners, with tax collectors or prostitutes, to be with the sick or the lepers that are rejected from society. Then in a way, he's saying, I will go anywhere that I need to be. There's no place that's too far for me to go. There's no condition on my love and sacrifice for you. That sacrifice ultimately culminating on the cross, where he takes on the debt and the punishment that wasn't due to him because of sin, but that he freely chose to take on out of love for us. Again, not just because sacrifice is good, but so that he can bring the light of his love into that moment. So that we never have to ask, well, I wonder if this is too far for Christ to go for me. I wonder if this area is too much for him, that he doesn't want to deal with that. Instead, he says, no, there's no length that is too far. There's no place that I will not be present to bring you the light of my love. So if Christ is a mysterious king, if he is one that sacrifices so generously for us, what does that mean for us? What does that ask of us in return? I think that's simply to respond by allowing him to be in our lives in that way. To embrace sometimes the mystery and the confusion that we may have in life. That when we're not sure about what's happening or how God is present in a moment of our day or in the world around us, they're invited to embrace that mystery. Not to say, Lord, I can't see you and so you must not be here. but instead, like Pilate, to allow that to percolate into a relationship with him, to stare and look for that golden thread, that love and presence of Christ, to see the goodness that he brings even out of suffering and tragedy, and in that way to embrace him as king. But also it's to open up the door of our lives. Not just to show him the things that are pretty and clean, but to open all the parts of our hearts. To open up the scary things in the closet that we feel like we need to keep from him. You know, sometimes when I'll come over to family's houses, especially to bless the house, usually there's the designated area, right? The designated area to throw all the stuff that you don't want anybody to see, right? And I always kind of laugh. Sometimes it's a closet. Sometimes it's the basement storage area. Sometimes it's the shed outside, you know. And I'll go, oh, hey, can I go in there to bless this room too? And I'll say, Father, don't go in there. We don't want you to see that stuff. And I'll tell him, I'll say, I'll close my eyes and just throw holy water. It's fine. I won't look at anything. Right? But I think sometimes we do a similar thing with God in the houses of our souls. Right? That there's some parts that we say, Lord, I can't show you that part. I can't show you that hurt and pain that I feel that's keeping me from forgiving somebody in the past. I can't bring you the sadness and feeling of loss I have because of something that happened. Lord, I can't give you all that stuff because it's just too ugly. I don't think that you'll take it. I think when we see Christ as one that sacrifices, that goes to any length out of love for his people, we realize he actually wants to come into those parts. Not just to fix us, not just so that we can feel like perfect people, but so that we can know the depth of his love. To see that he knows and cares for us even in those places. He can actually bring us healing and the light of his love. And nothing has to be kept in the darkness, or nothing has to be entrusted to us to fix ourselves. So let us allow Christ to be that mysterious but also generously sacrificial king. The one that comes into all parts of our lives and our hearts. That we're not afraid to open those doors to him and allow him to see them, to bring his love into them. To allow him to change us even a little bit as the king of our lives. I truly believe if we do that, Christ will not just become the powerful king of the universe, but he'll become the king of our lives. The king who rules us and guides us. That leads us not because he needs something from us, but leads us to restore us to freedom and to love. To restore us to fullness in this life, overcoming all sin and evil, so that we can rejoice with him in the kingdom of his heavenly Father.